This is episode 9 of IDRA Class Notes.
And at the elementary level, you see differences in the way boys and girls interact with one another, but they still tend to think of themselves as equals. As soon as middle school hits, that starts changing. Part of it is adolescence. Part of it is the expectations are still there from both female and male teachers that girls traditionally will go into certain roles, whereas boys will go into other roles. And that certainly shortchanges, as the Sacker and Sacker research pointed out in the 90s, that girls are still the ones being shortchanged. They don't get into the heavy-duty curriculum that the boys get into.
Welcome to IDRA's Class Notes podcast. I'm Aurelio Montemayor. If you're a regular listener, thank you for coming back. If you're a first-time listener, this is a podcast for people who care about making sure that every single child in our United States public schools has an excellent and equitable education. We want schools that work for all children. The Intercultural Development Research Association, IDRA, is deeply committed to making schools work for all children. Since 1973, our current 30-plus professionals are committed to making schools work and to value whatever language and culture children and families bring to school and to this country. During the course of this podcast, if you hear something that strikes you or that brings up a question you have, we would love to hear from your thoughts. There will be details at the end of this podcast for where you can send an email or fill out our comment form online. I also encourage you to subscribe to this podcast either through our website or iTunes and other podcast directories so that you won't miss a single episode. Today, our topic is gender equity, and I'll be interviewing Frances Guzman. Frances is an IDRA education associate, and she's been in education for over 30 years. She's been a teacher, she's served as an administrator, she's worked in curriculum. She does an awful lot of work also in parent involvement. At IDRA, she coordinates our activities in the area of gender equity. And she does this for our Equity Assistance Center, the IDRA's South Central Collaborative for Equity. And she also is a strong leader in some of our work in early childhood education. She is a passionate defender of education and of the families and children that most need public schools to work for them. So without further ado, Frances, first of all, just introduce us. What is gender equity?
Well, gender equity is a part of equity. Equity in our schools means that we celebrate diversity, that we look at the differences in a positive way, that we're looking at educational opportunity that is equal for both boys and girls, and that's where the gender piece comes in. Equity, gender equity in particular, is a true educational opportunity for both boys and girls to fully develop in everything that they're doing.
What are, for girls, let's say, that aspect of gender equity, because that's what we usually think about, is for girls. What are the big pieces? What are, like, if you would say, the bold strokes of where we have to really consider the issue of equity as far as girls are concerned?
Well, I think that, you know, biologically we are both male and female. And we are educated, as Abelock in 1997 said, we are educated together. But our experiences are very different. Both boys and girls experience the same type of education, but they experience it differently. And that has to do with the gender piece. Our language, our traditions, our customs, the way we interact in the classroom, the titles or the capacity to get into particular careers, and even the fact that we look at the world differently are some of the bolder strokes of gender equity.
How do those differences end up in being inequities? How do they affect children, especially females, in a negative way?
I'll start with a story. 34 years ago, this is a true story. A little girl gets picked up from her early childhood classroom and is asked, "How was your day?" And the little girl says, "Mama, I'm very mad." "And why is that?" the mother asks. She says, "Mrs.," and gives the name of the teacher, "said that I could not play with the blocks and the cars." The mother, being a classroom teacher herself, reflects on it before just reacting and says, was it the time to be at that center? Were you sharing? Was it your turn? And she goes, oh, none of that existed. Now, of course, this is a four-year-old girl. She says, I was told that little girls go to the homemaking center and little boys go to the blocks. Mm-hmm. Well, the mother was especially perturbed about this and says, well, what do you think we should do about this? She says, well, mother, you have to talk to the teacher. You know that at home I play with the blocks and with the dolls and I get to do all sorts of books. Why can't I do the same thing at school? So mother goes to see the teacher, who is very well thought of, has a lot of experience, and says, Mrs. So-and-so, I wanted to talk with you because my little girl is saying that she can't play with the blocks and with the cars. And the teacher laughs. She says, well, of course everybody can play with those. But you know, Mrs. So-and-so, the little girls do play with in the homemaking area, and the little boys do play with the blocks. So I do tell the little girls to go over there. And at that point, Mama says, this little girl plays with all of this because she needs to know about all of it, and she needs to talk about it with all of her little boys and her little girl friends. So that was the start of, for this family, the beginning of an introduction to what is different for girls and boys in the classroom. And this was at a very early age. It continues. The curriculum, the training that teachers get or don't get, the fact that expectations are that girls will do certain things and boys will do other things. The fact that at the elementary level, even though girls and boys participate very equitably in the sports, that tends to taper off at the middle school and the high school level, and in fact is almost non-existent until we had Title IX. All of these point to the fact that girls and boys still get treated differently. And so that means that they suffer. They don't get the equitable and opportunity to participate, which I think is the crux of the matter here. If we are going to turn this around, if we believe that both girls and boys can contribute, if we really do want to change the system, which is what is required, then we start looking at our curriculum. We start looking at the staff development of our teachers and instructional aides and anybody else. We start involving families in how we interact with both boys and girls. We start taking away the expectation that only certain people can do certain things. And we also change our curriculum. We also expand the opportunities for both boys and girls.
So science and math are also for little girls.
Very definitely. And in fact, that's where you see a lot of the changes occurring. We've got the Civil Rights Act. We've got Title IX. We've got Section 504. We have the Disabilities Education Act, which are all supposed to prevent discrimination. But until we put it into practice in classrooms, it doesn't happen.
I want to delve a little bit more. Okay. In terms of attitudes and opinions. Mm-hmm. But before we do that, you started mentioning, what are the laws? What basically do the laws and regulations say?
That it doesn't matter what gender you are, you're still supposed to be educated in our school systems, in our public school systems. And that we should be affording all of our students an educational opportunity to
participate. So if there's an eighth grade pre-algebra class, all little girls should have access to it?
The same way as boys. And vice versa. If a boy wants to participate in something that's considered more feminine, he also should have that opportunity. So that what we're doing is trying to even out the field.
Okay, you are Mexican-American, and you know, for example, that there was a law, Lavi Nichols, that said that if a child spoke a language other than English, using equal textbooks and approaches that you're using with English-speaking children is not enough. In other words, you have to adapt the instruction so that it's comprehensible to students.
Exactly.
What about with little girls? Do we have to change how we teach? Because if we keep on teaching the way we've taught, won't little girls and little boys self single out, especially like, for example, in higher math and science and stuff like that, where there's a traditional way of teaching that perhaps was more appropriate for male, more appropriate, mm-hmm. You know. What do you say about that?
Definitely a change in the way we teach is not only required, but should be expected.
But does a change mean like we soften the curriculum?
Not at all. Oh, no, okay. No. It's not a softening of the curriculum. It's ensuring that what goes out to students is appropriate. Like you mentioned, for children learning another language, same thing happens in the science and the math and the literature class. For example, we know that it has been thought that little girls need to be more passive or should be more passive, and little boys can be more creative and problem solving.
More aggressive, of course.
Right.
It's in the genes.
In the classroom, and it's not in the genes. All little boys and all little girls can be all. In the classroom, if we allow boys to be the creative problem solvers and little girls to be taking the notes and just sharing the information among themselves and not doing the presentations equally, then we are still perpetrating the same kind of teaching. If we allow boys to get more teacher time as well as response time and not give that same opportunity to little girls, then we are still perpetrating the inequality.
Even if the little girls culturally pick up that they need to nurture and support and love and care.
Well, those are qualities that all human beings really do need nurtured in and instruction in, probably. But, again, going back to that early childhood classroom, little boys can go into the homemaking, to that learning center, and play with the dolls so that they can learn how to be good parents, just like little girls can.
And so, supporting little girls to be aggressive?
Well, it's not aggressiveness that we're supporting. What we're looking at is that they both get the instruction that is appropriate for them to become the problem solvers, to become the risk takers, to become more technologically savvy. For example, the research is showing, a lot of very current research is showing, that little girls still use their computers for word processing, where little boys or the middle schoolers, younger adolescents, are using it to look to see what kind of situations they could get in and out of.
Yes.
So that is a distinction that as a classroom teacher, I not only need to be aware of, but communicate and ensure that there are activities that promote the interaction of both. And I can do that very easily by making sure that girls and boys are mixed together, that they problem solve together, and that they present together. That's a very elementary kind of way of taking care of it. But I also can look at the materials that I bring into the classroom. I can look at the things that the students are reading, making sure that they are free of biases, and our libraries are one very good source of finding out how we can change that, making sure that there is an element of adventure so that both boys and girls feel like they're contributing. So that it definitely falls into our classroom, but it also is bigger. You're looking at funding for equitable opportunities. Say the boys are the only ones going to the science fairs and are participating in these elaborate demonstrations, whereas the girls get to go to maybe one trip that tells them how they might be involved. Where we expose kids and how we do it, how the people that we bring into our classrooms to talk about the different careers. Anytime that I have career day, I not only make sure that it's equally divided among men and women, but that it also has the different types of careers, and I ask women in particular to share the kinds of things that they struggled with but were able to overcome very quickly.
So attitudes and opinions aside, and things that are harder to root out, mm-hmm. You can look at budget, for example, and seeing how things are funded. So if mm-hmm. there's a sport that's female-dominated, make sure it has the resources
the same
it needs.
Type, yeah.
If there is a trip or there's some access to higher education or technology that the girls have as equal access, as much access to those fields. Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. Now let me backtrack a little bit in terms of, I mentioned you're a Mexican-American.
Yes.
There are, in growing up, certain attitudes in the community that tend to support, quote, traditional
mm-hmm.
roles.
Right.
The law and school aside, what happens if the community says, no, we want our girls to be traditional, you know, they're going to get married anyway, so why prepare them for college? Mm-hmm. And we have heard that in some of our families as we grew up. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, in this day and age, any parent who thinks that once their child is married and is going to be taken care of really needs a rude awakening, because that may or may not happen. Boys and girls young men and women who get married can still not be taken care of, depending on their social, their economic, their educational backgrounds. So that's a fallacy that and a myth that I think we need to dispel. Number two, the nurturing belongs to both of us. As parents, it doesn't matter that I'm male or female, but if I have a child to take care of, I have to take care of all of their needs. So that means that the roles that I play in a family situation probably need to be looked at, that they can't be subdivided. Death, divorce certainly have come into play a lot in terms of how parents interact with their children nowadays, and the traditional roles are slowly eroding. Not that there's anything wrong with traditional roles, but there has to be a choice of how we do those. And that is something that families, I think, need to look at. The other thing about families is that the more education that we give both girls and boys, the better the future families are going to be. So that the fallacy of girls are going to get married and don't need formal education also gets thrown out the door, because we already know that both moms and dads have an influence over what happens to their children's education. And it has been found that fathers influence how much education their daughters receive by the way they treat them as well. But it's both boys and girls. And we have a lot of information, a lot of research on what happens in family dynamics. What I do know is that both benefit from getting equal experiences.
So if that's, if you're speaking to some degree what is a very complex thing, which is the relationship of the family, the culture, to the norms of the school, let's talk about within the school system. You have a lot of female teachers at the elementary mm-hmm. level. They still dominate.
Right.
A lot of your counselors are female. If you have a female teacher or a female counselor, does that guarantee that the gender equity issues are taken care of?
Not at all.
Why not?
In fact, it has been shown that in the research for the last 40 years that the education of both boys and girls is very dependent upon the sex of their teachers. For example, women tend to give more attention to the boy students than they do the girl students.
Why is that so?
I think it's some of it is that the expectations are that boys can respond quicker because they've had more experiences or because they're supposed to be risk takers, whereas girls are supposed to be more passive learners. They are rewarded for being neat and cute and taking care of things the way boys don't. And at the elementary level, you see differences in the way boys and girls interact with one another, but they still tend to think of themselves as equals. As soon as middle school hits, that starts changing. Part of it is adolescence. Part of it is the expectations are still there from both female and male teachers that girls traditionally will go into certain roles, whereas boys will go into other roles. And that certainly shortchanges, as the Sacker and Sacker research pointed out in the 90s, that girls are still the ones being shortchanged. They don't get into the heavy-duty curriculum that the boys get into.
So then what's rooted deeply into all professionals within the education system takes a major shift, because the whether it's a woman or a man, we all have these things ingrained in our mind, the way we see the world and stuff like that. Well, let me ask you in terms of equity, because a lot of times, whether it's ethnic equity or gender equity or whatever, it's seen, well, this group didn't have their piece of the pie and they want their piece of the pie, and it's all a limited piece and we're all fighting for the same crumbs. How does gender equity connect to the future economics of the state of this country? Does it just mean men will get less because women will get more? Or how do you see gender equity eventually affecting the meat and potatoes issues, how is the economy of Texas or of this country going to be affected? Will our economy improve in any way because we have more gender equity?
It certainly will, because we're looking at if both boys and girls have equal opportunity to education in particular and to everything else, then they become not only better parents because they understand that gender-neutral language is important, that they treat their boys and girls with expectations that they can succeed and give them the opportunities to do so, but you also get women in particular getting into the non-traditional fields, which traditionally have had more of an economic impact on them because they tend to be associated with higher salaries. So in other words, going into traditionally female roles has limited women because they don't get as much salary as men. If we were affording and making gender equity reality, then both men and women would have equal access to some of this pie. And it doesn't mean taking away from the pie. It means adding to the pie. You're adding ingredients that make it better. In other words, if I become a mathematician, where nobody else thought I could be one as a female, then I certainly become a role model. I certainly can strive for more equity in the workplace. I certainly can become a leader in my community by expressing the kinds of things that it takes to be a mathematician in whatever way. And it gives the community a bigger flavor of, wow, with all people contributing, it's very possible to change whatever we want.
Well, let me ask you. We've been talking about girls and how this benefits girls. And you just said giving to girls does not mean taking away from boys or from men.
Mm-hmm.
What's the boy side of the gender equity? How do boys get hurt with gender bias or gender prejudice?
Mm-hmm. Used to be that boys were not allowed to be the soft side of feminism. They were not supposed to express their opinions, their feelings in terms of the soft stuff that's considered feminine.
Boys don't cry.
Boys don't cry. Boys don't read the novels that are sensitive. Boys don't participate.
Hurts, you know, take it like a man.
Right. Don't participate in the things of community that belongs to women. Boys are not artistic. Even though they're very creative, they're not supposed to be into those fields. And they were shut out from a major, major part of our lives, which was the child care aspect. Boys and men were not supposed to be as nurturing or were not supposed to take care of their children the same way as women. In other words, they weren't supposed to cuddle. They weren't supposed to listen. They were supposed to provide the food. They were supposed to provide the medicine. They were supposed to make sure that there was a roof over their heads. But they weren't supposed to interact. They weren't supposed to take them to the park. They weren't supposed to go to school with them during career day, unless it was a very highfalutin career that they were trying to show off. So that they, boys in particular, were taken out of the mainstream of what becomes, for 90% of all children, part of their lives later on. They do become parents.
So do you want boys to be ballet dancers and girls to be carpenters?
If that's what boys and girls want, yes.
Okay.
I don't see anything wrong with that. It's a matter of choice. When you limit by our language, by our opportunities, by our curriculum, by the fact that our teachers still don't have the broad spectrum of equity in their teaching.
Like men becoming early childhood teachers.
Oh, that would be wonderful, because then they would have a lot more role models to look at. So that all of those things, it's not just about the classroom. We're talking about the bigger piece of our community, and we're also talking about the world. See, this isn't just a U.S. issue. Around the world, men and women, girls and boys get treated differently, and people are looking at it and seeing, why do we have this, and what can we do about it? It goes back to education. It goes back to funding. It goes back to eliminating sexist language and sexist attitudes. It goes back to leadership development for both boys and girls and men and women. And the expectations are that we can contribute equally.
Well, you know, thank you, Frances. This has been useful. You know, I think obviously our conversation is colored by the fact that IDRA has some very strong women in it, including the executive director, Dr. Maria del Refugio Robledo Montesel, who with her strong leadership qualities but also her wonderful compassion is a blend, I think, of the best of male and female qualities as they've been outlined. This reminds me of a poem that I taught as a high school English teacher called The Lead Knight, and the first line said, "Let young souls not be smothered out before they do quaint deeds and fully flaunt their pride." And I think that gender equity, like any equity, is about no young soul be smothered out.
Very much so. Our responsibility, we tend to forget that each one of us has such a profound influence on our young people. our the children around us, whether they be in a school setting, whether they be in the community, whether they be in whatever, our families. It is very much contingent upon each one of us as adults to make sure that they not only have opportunity, but that they do grow both spiritually and in body and in academics to their full potential. And that is what equity is all about. Gender equity is one little piece of that.
Thank you, Frances Guzman, and thank you, listeners. Please give us your feedback, and you will be given information as how to do that. And join us for our next podcast.
Thank you for listening to IDRA Class Notes. For more information on IDRA and other Class Notes topics, go to www.idra.org. You can also send us your thoughts by email to podcast@idra.org or fill out the form on our podcast webpage at www.idra.org/podcasts.